Hello, and welcome to Istros Conversations, where I have with me today Evelyn Farr, who's come to talk about her new book, I Love You Madly, Marie Antoinette and Count Fersen, The Secret Letters. Now, I've got a pre-pub copy in front of me. It looks wonderful, and I understand that the book's going to be released in a few weeks. This is the second book on Marie Antoinette that you've done with Peter Owen, Eve. Why two books, and what's new in this one?
Well, this book actually developed from the revised edition of the last book. I realised that there had never been a complete, unexpurgated edition of Marie Antoinette's correspondence with Axel von Fersen. There was an edition in the 19th century which was censored, and since then we've had digital photography and been able to examine the letters in greater detail, but there were certain letters that weren't published anyway, and I thought it would be good to do a complete edition, try and find as many letters as possible and set them in context with supporting documentation and other archive material.
It sounds very interesting. Tell me, I understand that in your research and through the documentation, you've become a bit of a literary spy, we can call it that. So what exactly did this process entail? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's really bizarre. I mean, I started looking into it in more detail because I got asked questions from the previous books about certain marks on the correspondence at the beginning of letters, numbers, and what did they mean, and what exactly, how did they communicate. And so I thought, well, I will go and find as many letters as I can and look at them, set them in context with Fersen's letter register, which is crucially important to date things. And it's a question of drawing together sources from several different archives. So I've been to the French archives, Swedish archives in two parts of Sweden, English archives, which is quite surprising because they both had English friends who provide commentary on the letters that we have. So I've been able to cross-reference letters in several different countries to give you a picture of the whole thing. And I'm always was educated to read between the lines of everything. So if I see something that reminds me of something I've read somewhere else, I will go and chase the clue. And it's a question of putting all those clues together to get the full picture. Mm-hmm. For example, there is one letter in this book that I tracked down where it's a letter from Lafayette, who was the Republican leader in the Revolution and in the American War of Independence also. And in one of her letters, Marie Antoinette writes to Fersen, I didn't need Santor's letter to hate him. Santor meaning blameless. Mm. And in Fersen's archive in Sweden, I found a cartoon, Le Santor, which was a cartoon about Lafayette. Ah. So I knew it referred to Lafayette. So that was one confirmation. But then what letter was she talking about? What was the letter of Santor? So you go back to the earlier letter from Fersen, and he had included a letter from Santor, from Lafayette, to one of his acquaintances in England, which he'd obtained from one of their English friends. And I found the actual letter in England, in Chatsworth, in the Duke of Devonshire's archives, because it was a letter written by Lafayette to the Duchess of Devonshire at the time. So that is in this book.
Right.
And it's a question of following the clues through. And then you find another copy of the letter, which was the letter that Marie Antoinette kept, the one that Fersen sent to her. It's in the handwriting of her secretary, François Gugula. That letter is in Sweden. So I actually tracked
it down.
So
you're an international spy as well. But you're particularly well suited for this role because I believe that It's part of your family tradition in a way, and also you're a fluent French speaker. So
I mean, I was taught French at a young age by my mother. She was a languages graduate, and she worked for Foreign Office or GCHQ MI6. At doing different things. She was sort of in house, and then she did bits of freelance stuff. So she educated me.
Excellent. And the book came out in April. in French. Now, the interesting thing is that you actually wrote it in French and then translated it yourself into English, right? Mm. So can you tell us a bit about that process? How did that work
for
you?
Well, I wrote it in French, obviously, because I started making... I have made quite a few discoveries in the correspondence because certain passages were blacked out, were censored, and I've managed to read beneath those passages. I've made 25 discoveries. Some of them are of several lines, and those are the first declarations of love we have from Fersen to Marie Antoinette.
And how could you read if they were blacked out? That's a quite a fascinating
Well, because thing. It's digital photography. I mean, I had previously had all of these letters on printouts from microfilm, so quite old microfilm. So it's really black on black. You can't see the ink. Well, and then I got high-resolution digital photographs, and you can adjust the contrast, you can adjust the colour balance and shading, so you can see the different shades of ink. That still, that helps, but it because these letters were sent in code, what we have from the letters that remain are Fersen's, mainly Fersen's in his handwriting, his copies before he encrypted them. So to encrypt them, he had to write the code word underneath. So you know how many letters are in the word, because he put a mark between each word, so you'd know, say, it was a five-letter word followed by a two-letter word followed by so on.
Okay.
But I also know his handwriting. I've read thousands of pages of his handwriting. So the letters that you have loops, you know, the J's and that, you can pick those out. The ones
from under the black ink. Yeah.
The ones with the full stop, you know, a point above, like eyes, you can pick those out. The ones with accents, you can pick out. So you can sort of piece together certain things. And that's how I managed to piece it all together. And it was all obviously in French, because that was the language they wrote it.
Of course,
although neither was French. So I thought I needed to explain my discoveries in French. So I thought, I'll write it in French. And because in France, they have a completely different idea of this relationship. So I thought it would be time to actually tell the truth in their own words.
Yeah.
As much as possible in their own words.
Yes.
So that's why I decided to write it in French.
Excellent.
And then I have translated it into English, which is different from... It's quite different when you're actually translating your own words.
Yes, I can imagine.
Into
yes.
English, because I... obviously used to writing in English, but we have many more ways of expressing ourselves than the French, and it's the same doing the translations from the letters. You find, I mean, there's one word that I found in one letter, it was repeated so many times, you know, affreux, dreadful, and I thought, well, dreadful, appalling, horrifying. It's trying to find a variant slightly, because it can be quite monotonous. If
we wanted to find some synonyms, to give the reader a break,
but it also it conditions slightly how you think about things as well, I think, in a different language. You need to think in the language that you're writing in.
Did you find yourself trying to correct yourself when you were doing it? Did you want to phrase it better when you did it in English?
Well, the funny thing was, when I was doing the translation into English, I was still checking the proofs in French. Now, I had been slightly cautious about some of the things that I included in the French edition. Being aware of certain French sensibilities. And then I thought, no, I'm going to put them in the English. And I went back and put them in the French proofs.
So it was a kind of cross-pollination.
It was a cross-pollination. Yes. I thought, no, it needs to be said.
Yeah.
So it was certain things in some of the English correspondence that I hadn't put in, that I put in, I put back into the French edition.
Fascinating. And you kind of hinted there about French sensibilities and things that you were worried about putting in or leaving out. Can you tell us a little bit about the reaction to the book in France then?
I would say decidedly mixed. There's a certain view of this relationship in France which has obtained ever since the 18th century, I suppose. And that is that they were... Fersen was in love with Marie Antoinette, or he adored her from afar, and he was this sort of courtly figure who did his best to help her, but it wasn't ever a physical relationship. And she was too conscious of her royal rank and too afraid to take it any further, so it was some kind of platonic relationship. given that they were both young and very attractive and very vital people, I find that very hard to believe. And it would have been sheer torture for them to keep seeing each other as they did constantly. And besides, he had secret lodgings with her and all of these things, right, that I've explained in the book.
Yes, yes.
But to go against that is because the French view Louis the 16th more, they've revised their view of Louis the 16th as some kind of good king that was somehow overwhelmed by circumstance. Whereas if you go through this correspondence, you find a king who was completely unable to deal with the situation mm-hmm. he was in, and he hid behind Marie Antoinette, who then had to assume responsibility for trying to save the monarchy, to try and stop the revolution going the way it did. But she was never backed up by her husband, who had the power, so she was in a really invidious position. But they will not accept... If you don't accept that view of Louis XVI, you then won't accept that she was a different kind of person, because that is the traditional view. You have the all-powerful king and the very docile wife.
Yes.
And she was anything but docile. So you have to look at her as a woman who had her own mind and very independent-minded kind of person. She did not do what she was told from the get-go when she mm-hmm. got to France. She never did what she was told. Her mother was always writing, you need to do this, you need to do that, and she went off and gaily did something
else. So you're really
confronting
the stereotypes here.
So I confront the stereotypes. So because I go against the stereotypes, and I mean, these stereotypes have been, you know, set in stone in books since, you know, time immemorial, really. And it's hard to change that perception,
yes,
which is why I've tried to let them tell the story in their own words.
Mm-hmm. Yes, through their letters,
yeah. Yes, through other people's letters and people that knew them, contemporary sources rather than memoirs and things that were written later. But so I've had good feedback from readers, from sort of independent online sites.
In France, yeah.
In France. But the establishment, I think, is going to be a lot much, much harder nut to crack. I'll put it that way.
Yes.
And I won't say too much else.
No, you're being diplomatic. How do you feel the book will change perceptions of her? Because I think I remember you saying at some point that somebody had said, and you could tell us who, that there are books about Marie Antoinette before your books and before this book, and there will be books afterwards, and this is a kind of watershed
yes,
in that way.
Yes, that was Gérard Housset, and he's the president of the French Marie Antoinette Association, and he said that nobody will be able to write the same kind of books because they have to take this research into account, because it does show us a very different woman. And I had a lovely, actually it was a private comment from somebody that wrote to one of my friends who read it, again a French reader, very into history, but they said they felt that they were looking over their shoulders as they wrote. They were in the moment, and that's what I want, because you often get biographies where it's all about what clothes she wore and how she did
yes.
her hair and playing the harp, and that's all interesting, but it's fluff.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you the person inside.
This is very intimate,
and
isn't
this is
it?
Very
yeah.
intimate, and I try to get to the woman inside and how she felt. And if you actually present somebody's letters, you are in that moment. You're in the moment that they're writing to that person that they love, how they feel.
Yeah.
And you can't help but get a different picture of a person. And also, from the letters I found quite a lot in England, for example, her friend the Duke of Dorset and Duchess of Devonshire, you find a lot about somebody from their friends.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And what their friends think about them.
Yeah.
And her friends were absolutely devoted to her.
Mm-hmm.
And in that comes across very clearly.
And she comes across as a very intelligent woman.
She comes
yes.
across as a very intelligent woman. And in the letters dealing with the counter-revolution, because her husband rather left things in limbo, she had to navigate between people stabbing her left, right and centre and trying to save her family and the throne and stop a civil war. She did everything to stop a civil war in France, which is, again, as change perceptions, because most people try or have been taught to believe that she wanted a war and she tried to start a war, and she spent a whole year trying to avoid a civil war at all costs. And in the end, it overwhelmed her. She couldn't stop it because the revolutionaries themselves precipitated the war.
Yes.
But that comes through again through this correspondence. And she was very realistic in mm-hmm. politics. She sort of knew who she could rely on.
She was a natural politician.
Yes. I mean, the worst thing was, I think she didn't realise that her own family were going to betray her in the end. And that's what really, the Austrians really let her down at the end.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's a new part of the story for me. I'll look forward to finding out that. Tell us the title, I Love You Madly, is that one of the phrases from the letters?
That is, and that was one of the first of my discoveries, and I found it in a letter from Fersen to Marie Antoinette. I found it several times in letters from Fersen to Marie Antoinette.
So it was a phrase that was used between them.
I mean, the best one is in his letter of the 29th. Of October 1791, he said, "I love you and will love you madly all my life." But he's got other examples of "I love you madly," and then since I made that discovery, the French archives, who've had a lot of machinery looking at the letters, mm-hmm. of Marie Antoinette's letters, they found the same expression, "I love you madly," from her to him. So that was there.
That was the obvious title.
Je vous aime à la folie.
Ah, beautiful. Yeah. Tell us now, because you've talked about a bit more about Fersen, who was Count Fersen?
International man of mystery, not really, no. he came from a very, very powerful Swedish mm-hmm. aristocratic family, political family. Mm. He was illegitimately descended from the kings of Sweden.
Right.
One of his earliest ancestors on his mother's side was a French Huguenot general who went up to Sweden in the 16th century, mm-hmm. conquered a large part of Finland for the Swedish crown. One of his great-great-grandfathers was regent for Queen Christina in the 17th century. Other ones were various. They always had affairs with the royal family, first and ancestors, on one side or the other.
Or is this drawing analogies?
So his father was a very powerful political figure in Sweden. But he fell out of favour with Gustav III. Mm-hmm. Well, Gustav liked Fersen, but also he used Fersen because he knew Marie Antoinette liked Fersen. He helped Fersen to stay attached to the French army so that he had a man on the inside, as it were.
I see.
So, you know, he had a guy in place who had the Queen's ear because Sweden was a strong ally of France, and also got quite a lot of subsidies from France in the 18th mm-hmm. century. So he was a career soldier, so he did his military career, but also he had the political diplomatic background, and he became a diplomat, and he ended up as Grand Marshal of Sweden, mm-hmm. so senior politician. So yeah, he was a powerful guy. But he also had a lot to do with Marie Antoinette's political education.
Right.
So she had political education from her mother and brother, and through the Austrian ambassador, the Comte de Mercy, who was sort of her early political advisor. Mm-hmm. But because there were various issues of contention between France and Austria, and she was always supposed to work for the Austrian side of the equation with her husband, who was not very inclined to listen to her, she used to turn to Fersen for impartial advice.
Right.
So there was they nearly went to war in 1785, France and Austria, over French Austrian demands to access to waterway in the Netherlands. And there's a lot of correspondence between Marie Antoinette and Fersen, which is lost, but we have the track record of it, where he sends her advice on the political situation.
And so this is a relationship on many levels.
It was love, definitely. Mm. Very, very powerful love relationship. But it was a friendship. Mm-hmm. It was a familial relationship, and it was an intellectual relationship.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was on all
a very full and rounded relationship in actual fact. Yes. Very interesting. Finally, can you tell us, I know you're planning some YouTube videos to tell us more about the process of how you worked on the letters and how you discovered some of the writing that was previously blacked out. Can you tell us a little bit more of that, just to give us a little bit of taste of what we can look forward to?
Well, what I want to try and do, because it's it is hard to explain it without images.
Yes.
So I'd like to actually get the images on screen and walk people through the process of how I made a discovery.
Yes.
Because it was one of those eureka moments where I was just sitting at home looking at a screen, and then I thought, am I seeing what I'm seeing? And then I went back and checked, and then I pinged it off to my friends in France and said, am I mad? Or have I really seen this? And that was, they all went woohoo, because it was, you know, it was the first discovery of these words and in these letters.
Well, it's what every researcher dreams of, a moment
Well, you can't believe it when it happens.
Yes.
Because you're sitting there thinking, oh, well, you know, I can set this up, I can write the context and that. And then you're like, I love you madly. No, come on, that can't be right.
Wonderful.
But it's to explain it, it's quite, once you get into the methodology, you can actually do it. It's not, it's because obviously there's certain words have to come in a certain order in a French sentence, just by grammar.
Yeah.
So you can fill in certain things as well as you pick out certain letters, and then you know how many letters are in the word. It's rather like doing a crossword puzzle, but with some blacked out squares, or I don't know, something a bit like that. But I want to be able to explain
with the visuals. Yeah, I think
with
that
the visuals
will, yeah.
And maybe possibly do a separate video about just their relationship, because of all the supporting documentation about where he used to stay and when he was in France. Because before my book, my last book,
yes,
there's the general idea was that Fersen was in France, you know, in the late 1770s, then he went off to America, and then he disappeared to Sweden for several years, and suddenly pops up in 1791 to rescue the royal family, and that's, nothing could be further from the truth. He was in France for most of the 1780s.
Right.
And that's when, that was the happiest part of their relationship. So I've actually pinpointed where he was for many years to show how they were together when people thought they weren't together.
So you've really made the story complete, I see.
Yes. I mean, there's an overhanging mystery, which I may look into, but I'll keep that one back.
We'll leave that for next time. Thank you very much, Evelyn Farr, for talking to us today. Thank you.
Thank you.